In this episode, we learn about the great leadership that happened in the Book of Mormon.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only and only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness, the loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.
Welcome back to the Leading LDS Podcast. My name is Kurt Frankham. I am the host, and I like the job. I think I'll keep it. And today we are sharing an article. This is actually a guest post, as you would call it, that somebody submitted about leadership. And I've been getting a lot of these posts. I think you've been hearing different voices on the podcast, which I'm very excited about. And, you know, if you ever have a leadership principle you come across in the scriptures or a book you're reading or just in your life and feel like, man, I could put a simple article together that would help other leaders understand this and maybe enhance their leadership as well, let me know. Let's get it posted on Leading LDS. Now, this article is actually written by Tevye Washburn, who is my business partner. Very, very good doctrinal mind, really knows his stuff when it comes to the doctrine of the gospel, and I'm always learning from him. And so I was excited when he offered to share something on Leading LDS about leadership, and it turned out great. He's such a great writer and really, really put an article together that you'll love. And before I forget, make sure you go to mormonlifehacker.com. This is actually Tevye's creation. He's done a great job of putting some simple, practical, day-to-day ideas together about how to be a better Latter-day Saint and how to do things better, from how you pay your tithing to different technologies out there that can keep your home safe and keep good content in your home. There's all sorts of ideas that it's worth checking out at mormonlifehacker.com. Here is Tevye Washburn reading his article, Mosiah, the Consummate Leader.
Mosiah, the Consummate Leader, by Tevye Washburn, read by Tevye Washburn. Quote, "We have learned by sad experience that it is the nature and disposition of almost all men, as soon as they get a little authority, as they suppose, they will immediately begin to exercise unrighteous dominion." Joseph Smith, as recorded in DNC 121:39. In the history of the world, we're hard-pressed to find more George Washingtons. That's part of why he's so revered and even deified. He could have taken a lot more power after the war, like Bonaparte and Cromwell. He didn't. Not only did he not amass power to himself, but he even rejected consolidating too much power in the office of POTUS. The most enduring example of this is probably his refusal to put himself up for re-election for a third term. It set a precedent that was honored for well over a century afterward, and then made law in the 22nd Amendment in 1947. Interestingly, the Book of Mormon has a number of such leaders. If that was the only history you knew, like a Nephite might, you'd probably think these sorts of leaders were somewhat common. The truth is, they're extremely rare, and there's maybe only a few other candidates in all of world history. Book of Mormon Leaders. That book starts right off with Nephi, who was so beloved by his people, they called the kings after him, 2 Nephi, 3 Nephi, and so on. The name Nephi literally came to mean king or honored leader among them. He was able to lead with such unselfish effectiveness that all his people loved and revered him. He was also able to give up that power, selflessly choosing a righteous successor who was not his own descendant, it appears, before he died. Captain Moroni also comes to mind. He had the hearts and the minds of the people, and command of the army. He even marched on the capital to overthrow the government when he perceived a lack of ability on their part. But he doesn't want to take over or become dictator. He simply wanted a government that would support the fight for freedom. He had no desire to be supreme ruler. Many others could be listed here as well. Mosiah 1, King Benjamin, Alma the Younger, Mormon, and others. They are these selfless leaders who had a great deal of power, but didn't use that power for evil or in selfish ways. They only exercise that power to do the will of the Lord and help their people. They're the ultimate leaders and absolutely deserve studying. Mosiah 2. Mosiah 2 stands out in my recent studies. As a king and judge, he's faced with two major controversies in his time. The first is when many non-believers were persecuting members of the church. His kingdom becomes divided between those who believe and those who do not. The division occurs when many of a new generation grow up. They don't remember King Benjamin and the things he taught, nor did they experience the captivity of Limhi's people or Alma's followers. They turn to wickedness and apostasy. These non-believers commit many sins and are brought to the priests with witnesses who testify of their iniquities. The priests take them to Alma because they don't know what to do. This kind of widespread public wickedness hasn't been a problem among the Nephites before. Alma doesn't know what to do either, so he takes them to Mosiah. In Mosiah 26:11, we read what Alma said to Mosiah. "Behold, here are many whom we have brought before thee, who are accused of their brethren. Yea, and they have been taken in diverse iniquities, and they do not repent of their iniquities. Therefore, we have brought them before thee, that thou mayest judge them according to their crimes." Now, the typical leader would see this as a problem to be solved, and if he's power-hungry, as most are, an opportunity to amass more power. He'd quickly judge these people and thereby set precedent that he's the supreme judge over all the things regarding the law of the land and the laws of God. If he'd thought of Alma as a subordinate, since he appointed him, he could have easily made it clear here by doing the judging. Quote, verse 12. "But King Mosiah said unto Alma, Behold, I judge them not, therefore I deliver them into thy hands to be judged." Verse 13. "And now the spirit of Alma was again troubled, and he went and inquired of the Lord what he should do concerning this matter, for he feared that he should do wrong in the sight of God." Not only does Mosiah not take this chance to gain more power or clarify his position over Alma, but he doesn't even give Alma any advice or direction. In our modern language, it's like he says, "This is your stewardship, Alma, not mine. You go talk to the Lord about it. You have right to receive revelation in this matter." We know that Alma then receives one of the great revelations recorded in the Book of Mormon. The Lord speaks to him for some time and teaches him many doctrinal truths, including how to judge the members of the church in righteousness. If Mosiah had just used his considerable experience and fixed the problem, he would have gained more power, but Alma wouldn't have learned about stewardship or the powerful lessons the Lord taught him, and we wouldn't have the powerful revelation that follows. Succession controversy. Later in his reign, Mosiah is faced with another huge problem. His oldest son, Aaron, has refused to be king. He knows that if he makes someone else the king, controversy might arise around it. He also knows the great burden that is placed on a king, even if he's a righteous one. In Mosiah 29, he writes to his people explaining why a king is not a good idea. And there we pick up the story again. Verse 33. "And many more things did King Mosiah write unto them, unfolding unto them all the trials and troubles of a righteous king, yea, all the travails of soul for their people, and also all the murmurings of the people to their king. And he explained it all unto them." Verse 34. "And he told them that these things ought not to be, but that the burden should come upon all the people, that every man might bear his part." Wow, that's got to be unprecedented. A king being super open and laying out all the trials and troubles that come with being a righteous king. If you look at it cynically, it's like he's saying, "I'm tired of taking your sins and bad choices and drama upon myself. It's not fair for me or anyone else to have to bear that burden. It's time for you to take responsibility for your own salvation." But Mosiah is not a cynic, and he's saying this out of love. It's not that they didn't control their own salvation before to some extent, But the king, in a Christ-like way, took some of the responsibility upon himself, just as a wicked king would. The difference is probably that the righteous king does so knowingly and purposefully, and with his eyes wide open to what he's doing. Quote, verse 37. And now it came to pass, after King Mosiah had sent these things forth among the people, they were convinced of the truth of his words. Verse 38. Therefore they relinquished their desires for a king and became exceedingly anxious that every man should have an equal chance throughout all the land. Yea, and every man expressed a willingness to answer for his own sins. Verse 39. Therefore it came to pass that they assembled themselves together in bodies throughout the land, to cast in their voices concerning who should be their judges, to judge them according to the law which had been given them. And they were exceedingly rejoiced because of the liberty which had been granted unto them. The people see the value in what he's arguing and the freedom it provides. They also want the responsibility for their own actions. It says sins, but they also get more gain from their righteousness and agency. I wonder if King Benjamin's people were blessed and received those covenants in part because of Benjamin's righteousness. Kind of like with Moses and the children of Israel. They were offered the higher law and to see the face of God, perhaps mostly based on Moses' righteousness. But they weren't ready and rejected the opportunity, and so were given a lesser law. Now stop and think a moment about what Mosiah has done. He's not only released his sons from the burden of being king, he's dissolved the monarchy completely. This wasn't some forced abdication or beheading of a king, like we see in the 16th, 17th, and 1800s in Europe. This is a king willingly giving up his power to the people. In fact, he's the one convincing them that it's the right thing to do. They want a king. This isn't the American or French revolutions. The people want a king. Yet he convinces them it's not in their best interest and sets up a system of laws and judges to apply those laws. Ultimately, it's a sort of representative democracy, where the people are the ultimate judges and ultimately responsible for their personal and societal destiny. This is perhaps completely unprecedented in the history of the world before or after Mosiah, a truly Christ-like leader. So what is the result of all this? Does this kind of leadership work? Of course it does, because it's absolutely Christ-like. But let's look at what the record says. Verse 40. And they did wax strong in love towards Mosiah. Yea, they did esteem him more than any other man, for they did not look upon him as a tyrant who was seeking for gain, yea, for that lucre which doth corrupt the soul. For he had not exacted riches of them, neither had he delighted in the shedding of blood. But he had established peace in the land, and he had granted unto his people that they should be delivered from all manner of bondage. Therefore they did esteem him, yea, exceedingly beyond measure. And there it is. Mosiah is a true leader. Here's the Christ-like attributes that stood out to me in this verse. 1. Did not seek personal gain or riches. 2. Does not like conflict, contention, drama, and actively sought to avoid or resolve those things. 3. Established and reverenced peace. 4. Gave people more freedom, agency, and personal responsibility. 5. Gave away power when possible to accomplish more of number 4. I could go on and on about how he implemented those desires and aims. For example, he does all this to explain to the people why they shouldn't want a king. He doesn't just try to force it on them. He wants people to understand. How many leaders take the time and effort to explain their action to those who are beneath them? There's many great attributes here to study, and study them we should. Alma 1:1 eulogizes the then-dead king. Now it came to pass that in the first year of the reign of the judges over the people of Nephi, from this time forward, King Mosiah, having gone the way of all the earth, having warred a good warfare, walking uprightly before God, leaving none to reign in his stead, nevertheless he had established laws, and they were acknowledged by the people. Therefore, they were obliged to abide by the laws which he had made. He used his position and power only to the benefit of others and according to the Lord's will. Beyond that, he didn't place any value in it and gave it away repeatedly. Obviously, the point of this post is that we need to be like that and not desire or seek power and authority. And when it's given us, we should bear it with the humility that Mosiah did, always looking to give responsibility and autonomy back to those around us, rather than gathering power around our person or position. But there's lots of other great attributes we can study in this great leader and others like him in the Book of Mormon.
That concludes Tevye's article. I sure appreciate him submitting that. And be sure again to go check out MormonLifeHacker.com and just peruse around on the many great ideas he has of improving your life as a Latter-day Saint. He's a good man, a good partner in crime is day to day. And I love working with him for sure. And if anybody else has a specific leader or prophet in the scriptures that they really like to get down and analyze, you know, their leadership approach, their ability, the principles they live by in relation to leadership, we can all become better leaders as we look on these men in the scriptures who were fantastic prophets, even the ones that maybe weren't prophets, definitely Jesus Christ, who is the ultimate leader. And I would love your thoughts if you put together a simple article, submitted it, and let's share ideas about what we can learn from the scriptures in regards to leadership. As always, I encourage you to go to leadinglds.com/help. Now, one simple way that you can help Leading LDS that actually doesn't cost you any more money than you're already spending is there is a link on that page at leadinglds.com/help, H-E-L-P. There's a link there for Amazon. And basically, you bookmark that link for whenever you go to Amazon. I know many of you use Amazon a lot and are on Amazon Prime and constantly ordering. And so you use that link whenever you order something from Amazon, no matter what it is. And what happens is they will give a portion of the profits of whatever it is you buy to Leading LDS. And so keep that as your bookmark. Every time you buy books or batteries, random toilet trees, whatever it is you buy on Amazon, they will send money our way to Leading LDS. So a great way to keep things moving. Until next time, be a leader. You know the rest, and not a calling.